Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant of Arms be asked to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Today's chaplain is Reverend Carl M. Nielsen III from Arlington Hills United Methodist Church in St. Paul. And following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I invite you to be in an attitude and spirit of prayer. Almighty God, we offer our thanks and praise for all that has been and all that is yet to be in this great state. Grant us wisdom, courage, patience, persistence, and above all, a heart that reflects your compassion. We pause to remember those who are struggling. At the close of this day, may our deliberations be found worthy of our high calling as servants of the people. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States. Liberty and justice.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeKreif, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Fischbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Hayden, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingerbertson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Cruz, Kubley, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Laurie, Magnus, Marty, McGuire, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Spark, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Wieger, Wolf.
Quorum is present. Moving to the second order of business, please take note of the Executive and Official Communications. The first is printed here. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that the notary publics be laid on the table.
And that is printed on page one, directly under Executive and Official Communications. On Senator Senjum's motion to lay on the table, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. There are several other Executive and Official Communications on page one that we need no action of. Just please make note of those. Moving on to the third order of business, messages from the House. The Secretary will read the first message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file number 149, a bill for an act relating to civil actions. Senate 149 is herewith returned to the Senate. Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 149 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Just make note that those changes are on House Journal page 5398. Discussion to the motion. Senator Latz.
Madam President, will Senator Ortman yield?
Senator Ortman will yield. Senator Latz.
Senator Ortman, would you please explain what the changes were made in the House and what form it now appears before the Senate?
Senator Ortman.
Madam President and Senators, Senator Latz, I believe this is the bill where the class action interlocutory appeals was put together with the changes in the conciliation court amount.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Ortman, were any additional changes made specifically in any of the content of either the class action portion or the conciliation court compared to when it left the Senate floor?
Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Ortman, were there any changes to the bill's content compared to how it left the Senate floor? And if there were, would you please explain what those changes were besides the merger of two separate bills into one jacket.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President and Senator Latz. I believe the conciliation court amount or the limit was changed from $15,000 to $10,000, and the out-of-pocket expenses was taken out of the interlocutory appeal provision.
Senator Latz.
Madam President and members, I'm going to urge you to vote no on the motion to concur with the House. There are a number of reasons for that. This is part of a package of so-called tort reform bills, which really is a concerted and collective effort across the country to change the civil justice system to make it harder for those who are injured, personal injury, for those who are terminated wrongfully from their jobs, or those who are victims of consumer fraud, to achieve justice in our civil courts. These bills are part of an effort promoted by the American Legislative Exchange Council, big insurance companies, and big business special interests to make it tougher on individuals to get into the courthouse, and when they get in, to have success in pursuing legitimate claims. The class action lawsuit part of this bill would have the effect of stopping in its tracks, perhaps for as long as a year or two, legitimate claims that are being pursued or attempting to be pursued collectively on behalf of multiple plaintiffs who are similarly situated, to the point where it would even stop discovery in the lawsuit. It would freeze the pursuit of these cases at the point of appeal of a class certification decision by the judge. It would impose substantial additional costs on the lawyers and the parties representing the plaintiffs, the claimants, in addition to the substantial delay in justice. The conciliation court piece is dramatically different from when it left the Senate floor. The Senate had increased the dollar amount to $20,000 from the current $7,500. The bill before you now cuts that increase only to a top limit of $10,000. I would submit hardly worth the administrative paperwork in adjusting that change in the conciliation court. The bill before you also does not have a separate lower limit for consumer debt transactions, which means it will make it easier for debt collectors and others acting on behalf of those companies trying to collect debts to get default judgments in larger amounts against your constituents who are individual consumers or individual borrowers, those who have credit card debt or have other debt. You may recall a Star Tribune series a year ago that detailed many, many problems and abuses within the debt collection system, including abuses within the conciliation court process, where default judgments are the standard operating procedure for the debt collectors. Under the bill before you, they will be able to get default judgments on much higher amounts than they currently can. And in addition to that, with the default judgments in conciliation court, there are far fewer procedural protections for those individuals who are alleged to owe debts. Many of the abuses that were identified included wrong amounts owed, wrong people, absence of notice altogether. So you can, and then you have to fight. Once something goes on the court docket as a default judgment, there are a lot more hoops to jump through to clear your name or clear the record if you were wrongfully adjudged to have owed a debt or in the wrong amount. So members, don't fall for the claim here that these are mere civil justice reforms, because this is a piece of a puzzle, as the other bills that will come before you today are as well, that collectively raise the barriers substantially for individuals to achieve justice in our civil court system. So here you can vote on behalf of the consumers, on behalf of individuals, on behalf of all of your constituents who may have been wrongfully terminated or subjected to a hostile work environment, or you can vote for big business and big industry and big insurance who are backing these bills. I encourage a no vote.
Further discussion, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. And members, don't be alarmed or confused. That's intentional. Let's talk about the common sense nature of this bill. It does two things, two very simple things. It says that when a district court certifies a class action, meaning allowing a few plaintiffs to stand in the place of hundreds or perhaps thousands of plaintiffs, that decision by the district court whether or not to certify the class should be appealable to our Court of Appeals for a simple and straightforward review. Did the court get it right when it authorized a few plaintiffs to act on behalf of hundreds or thousands of plaintiffs? It's an important decision on behalf of the defendants, for sure. It's also important for plaintiffs, because now they are proceeding on behalf of others similarly situated who might have very separate and distinct interests. It's important for the plaintiffs, it's important for the defendants, because when those plaintiffs' attorneys turn a lawsuit into a class action, now they can conduct discovery on behalf of the entire class, which can be extremely burdensome for the defendants and extremely cost prohibitive. And those costs get passed along to the consumers. So this is a very straightforward bill. All it does is allow our Court of Appeals to do its work and review on a timely basis the district court's decision whether or not to certify a class. That's number one, pretty common sense. But here's the thing that hasn't really been disclosed here. The second part is that conciliation court limit. We're in this bill, we are lifting it to $10,000. That would allow all Minnesotans more access to an affordable justice system. More folks can bring their own actions or defend actions in our conciliation courts without having to go through all the process, the expense, and the time consumed in our district courts. Currently, the level is $7,500. We want to propose a $10,000 limit. I would have preferred the $20,000. But it's a little disingenuous to say that this is bad for Minnesota, especially when this bill left with a $20,000 conciliation court limit, it had 65 votes in this chamber, 65 to nothing. This is about affordable and accessible justice, members. We all voted for it last year. The House made some adjustments. It's not as high as we might like, but it's still an improvement on the current conciliation court level at $7,500. So, members, I urge you to accept the changes made in the House in these bills and send it along now to the governor for his approval.
Further discussion, Senator Latz.
Madam President, I ask for a roll call vote.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call granted. Seeing no other discussion, Senator Ortman renews her motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House on Senate File 149 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. There will be a roll call on that motion. Secretary will take the roll. Secretary will close. Oh, excuse me. Secretary will close the roll. There being 36 ayes and 30 nays, the motion does prevail. The Secretary will give Senate File 149 its third reading.
Senate File Number 149 relating to civil actions regulating certain conciliation court claims permitting appeals of certain court orders related to class actions, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 36 ayes and 30 nays, the bill is passed. Continuing under messages from the House, the secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File Number 373, a bill for an act relating to civil actions. Senate File 373 is herewith returned to the Senate. Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Ortman.
Madam President, I would move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File Number 373 and that the bill be passed on its repassage as amended.
To that motion, Senator Latz.
I ask for a roll call vote.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call granted. Senator Latz.
Will Senator Ortman yield?
Senator Ortman will yield. Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Ortman, will you please explain the differences in the bill between when it left the Senate floor and how it's coming back now from the House?
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President and members. The bill is substantially the same. What it does is it reduces our statute of limitations from 6 years as a presumption to 4 years. So the time within which to bring a lawsuit after you've become aware of the nature and the existence of the cause of action would be 4 years. And the one change made by the House, we had reduced antitrust claims to 2 years. It's been restored to the four-year level. So what this does is change the 6 years to 4 years to bring a lawsuit.
Senator Latz.
Madam President and members, I'm going to ask the body to oppose this motion. Since 1841, Minnesota has had a six-year statute of limitations, and there is no evidence whatsoever to suggest that that has been a problem. None whatsoever. Civil case filings for injuries in Minnesota are down 40% since 1997. 40% drop. So there is no litigation explosion in Minnesota. That's one argument that proponents sometimes offer in support of a reduced statute of limitations. This is a solution chasing to find a problem, and there isn't a problem for it to address. Who will this benefit? Who will this bill benefit? Insurance companies, because it will end their exposure more quickly. But it will not benefit consumers who pay insurance premiums. The studies from 30 years ago when I was in law school and the studies in the last several years are remarkably consistent that where bills have been passed to adjust statutes of limitations or other tort reform so-called initiatives. And the idea was to reduce the cost of insurance. There are no reductions in premiums. Now, what a surprise, members. First of all, the studies have shown there is little, if any, impact whatsoever on the incidence of lawsuits or the results of lawsuits. But on top of that, even where there were some allegations or suggestions that the reform had some impact on the incidence of lawsuits or the number of claims or anything like that, the insurance companies, if they made any more money off of it, never passed those savings on to the premium holders. And in fact, the recent numbers show that in states where they have passed these so-called tort reforms, insurance premiums are higher than in states like Minnesota where they have not passed. So I will respectfully suggest to you that if you vote for this bill, if it becomes law, you will be voting for higher insurance premiums for your constituent individuals and businesses. Is that a vote you really want to take? I would encourage you to oppose this bill. There's adequate time now with the 6 years for people to determine whether they have injuries of certain types, to determine whether they have a good cause of action to bring to a lawsuit, to do a complete investigation. And it would not cut short individuals that have legitimate claims that have not been in a position to make that decision until now. If there's no problem, what are we trying to fix? We encourage you to oppose this bill.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. This is another bill that passed the Senate with bipartisan support, 45-20 on two votes taken previously, just as the last one passed originally with bipartisan support. There have not been substantial changes to this language. Members, Minnesota adopted a six-year statute of limitations provision back when lawyers had to hire clerks to hand write out three, four, or five copies of the same pleadings. Back in the time when they were served through Pony Express, when it would take weeks to get to witnesses to interview them to understand the causes of action. We don't have that business climate. That's not how our lawyers work now. It's not how our courts work. We don't need 6 years to investigate a claim and decide whether or not there is a reasonable cause of action. It's not necessary, and it's expensive. What you haven't heard today, members, is that justice delayed is justice denied. This means that the lawsuit doesn't even begin until 6 years after the plaintiff has understood that he has or she has a cause of action. That's delay. It's expensive. Our courts take long enough to get to trial. We don't need to add time to that for all the Minnesotans that bear the costs. And it is not just the insurance companies. They don't stand anything to gain here. That is completely false. In fact, there are 67,000 employers, Minnesota members, that have asked us to sign and support this legislation. Why? Because then the carrying costs and the cost of doing business go down. If they don't have to carry the insurance for an additional 2 years for risk of loss, then they can reinvest that money back into their business. It's more productive for them. There's a huge opportunity cost with a potential lawsuit continuing out there for more than 6 years without being known they have to carry the insurance for the risk of loss. This is not in the insurance company's best interest. This is in the best interests of Minnesotans. And I would assure you, members, that this is better for the courts, too. Because if it takes longer to get to the filing, that means that the evidence, when it finally reaches the court and reaches the jury, is far more questionable. It's better the fresher it is to the actual cause of action occurrence. So, members, this is good for Minnesota. I'll remind you that 45 of us voted for this bill last year.
Further discussion, Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise to oppose the motion because this is a series, members, of tort deform bills, not reform bills, but tort deform bills. This really does not help our system of gaining of getting action from your lawsuits. Lowering the statute of limitations only benefits insurance companies and the employers who hire insurance companies, but it ends their exposure much more quickly. These are mainly cases between consumers and insurance companies and employers. So it reduces the amount of time that consumers have to file their claims. So it doesn't benefit them through lower insurance costs, because we know that insurance companies don't lower their costs because of this, but it does allow insurers to deny legitimate claims because of time frames. So the only people to testify in favor of taking this away, this right, were the insurance companies. So members, I encourage you to not support this insurance and tort deform bill.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, members, I need to correct the record on a couple of points from Senator Ortman. She indicated that the statute of limitations in these cases would start running from the time that people discover that they've had the injury, and that's not what the content of the bill indicates. The four-year statute of limitation would begin from the date of the occurrence when the cause arises, not just a personal injury. Typically, if you've been in a bad auto accident, you know when that happens, but when there are contract disputes or the other kinds of disputes, business-to-business disputes, we don't have a discovery rule in Minnesota in these cases. So it's not that you get to wait until you find out about the problem and then you get 4 years. It's when the problem occurs. You might not even find out that there was an issue until some information comes to light a year or two or 3 years after the occurrence. For example, in a business-to-business dispute where there's a contract issue, maybe you find out several years afterward that an employee had given some information to a competitor or an employee that had left your company, and information comes out from a competitor that tells you, boy, that must have happened 3 years ago, or maybe it happened 5 years ago. Under current statute of limitations, you still have a right to bring a contract dispute. And in fact, many states allow 10 or 15 years for contract disputes to be brought. 4 years in Minnesota will be too short, and that will shortchange your business community as well. And I should also note, especially in collection matters, and I've talked a little bit about that before, a shorter limitation period will cause more debt collectors to file cases in court. It will increase court filings because oftentimes there is a long period of time during which collectors, either credit card companies themselves or third-party debt collectors, whether it's directly on behalf of the creditor or if it's as on behalf of a third-party purchase debt, they will try to work out payment plans. And they will try to make all sorts of efforts to collect the funds before filing in court. If they run up against the statute of limitations and they haven't finished working that out, or they have some trouble with the payment plan and they haven't had a chance to get it sorted out yet, they're going to file that lawsuit because they're up against the statute of limitations rather than trying to work it out for another year or two. And for people who are on payment plans, this is really important. This bill actually could substantially increase filings in conciliation court or also in district court. So for those reasons, I encourage you to oppose this bill.
Senator Cohen, did you still? Okay, Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Ortman, I guess I wanted to follow up on that too. I always understood we didn't have a discovery rule, and yet you're saying 4 years after the discovery, and I don't think that's accurate. And I'm just asking you, do you believe it is accurate? I thought we don't have a discovery rule, and you were just saying that it was, and so I'm glad Senator Latz raised it, but.
Senator Ortman.
Well, Madam President, it depends on the cause of action, actually, under Minnesota law. Madam President, I would yield back to Senator Marty if he wanted to speak further, but I did wish to be recognized.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, I'd like clarification on when we have a discovery rule, because I understood we did not have one.
Senator Ortman.
Well, Madam President, that's a much broader question than I'm prepared to answer on the Senate floor today, but I'm sure we can work on it in the Judiciary Committee. Madam President, I wanted to be recognized if I could to speak.
Yeah, I was going to do that next. So, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I just wanted to make the point that there are many states in the nation that have a 2-year statute or a 3-year statute. Minnesota is an outlier at 6. The average is actually less than 4 years, so it makes a lot of business sense for us to change our statute of limitations for the first time to 4 years.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Madam President, Senator Ortman, you indicated, well, you're not sure about the discovery rule, but we can work on that. No, this is the bill on the floor right now. We got to work on it right now, or we ought to send the bill back to committee, not pass it off the floor. You've heard from both Senator Latz and Senator Marty relative to what happens in the state of Minnesota. If somebody is in an auto accident this afternoon and feels they're not injured, there's no problem, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, there's a manifestation of those injuries, the statute of limitations has begun to toll this afternoon. That's what's true in almost every instance with litigation in Minnesota. And if you're unsure of that, you're not quite sure how it all works, then we shouldn't, you're the author of the bill, we shouldn't pass this bill off the floor of the Senate today.
Senator Ortman, do you want to respond directly to that? Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. Again, it depends on the type of action and the cause of action at stake. So medical malpractice is different than contracts, which is different than personal injury. I mean, some of them are different. Some have discovery rules. Others depend upon the actual date of the harm or the breach of contract.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President and Senator Ortman, yes, with some medical malpractice, there's a difference between the statute of limitations tolling and if you determine that there is some type of injury. But I would ask you to name anything else explicitly where it's any different in terms of the statute of limitations, because I don't think you can do it.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, you know, it's where the rubber meets the road on some of these that we need to fix, and I haven't heard anybody talk about the other end of it. What if you're the person on the receiving end, and this is what happened to me, one day before the 6-year statute of limitations, one day before that, I got served in a lawsuit. Now, you go back and you think about, did I do something wrong? What was going on in this specific instance? It was an inspection I had performed, and somebody didn't like something in that inspection. So you're trying to remember 6 years later every detail in that inspection? And believe me, people played that out to that one day before the 6 years just to try to make sure you don't have that memory. So people use that kind of thing against you. And I had a bunch of attorney friends of mine. Yes, I have attorney friends. You know, I don't know how that works sometimes. But they said, don't vote in favor of this. But they're typically not the people on the other end of the spectrum. And I believe this is good, because if you can't figure it out in 4 years, and there's an exception to every rule, Senator Cohen, Senator Latz, we know that. We can't make a law that's perfect. If you can find one law we've passed in this body since I've been here, this is my 10th session, I don't think we've passed any perfect laws. There's an exception. We can find that exception. We can harp about them all day long. But where the rubber meets the road, where real people get involved, where real businesses get involved, 6 years is just plain too long to remember the details of some of these actions.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Madam President, Senator Jungbauer, whether there are a couple of separate issues here. What concerns me is we don't have a clue as to what we're passing off the floor. As a Senate, we should at least have some sense, some elementary sense of what we're doing. And actually, I misspoke, Senator Ortman. I believe, in fact, I think Senator Kubley was the author of the legislation which changed the statute of limitations relative to sexual abuse matters, where you had a child affected by that, that there was a delay in the statute of limitations. But, Senator Jungbauer, to suggest that, well, there are exceptions to every rule. No, if you pass a statute of limitations that says it's a 4-year statute or a 2-year statute or a 6-year statute or a 6-month statute, no, there are no exceptions. And I would ask you, Senator Youngbauer, since you made that assertion, if you could start citing case law that allows such exceptions, because you're not going to find them.
Senator Youngbauer.
And thank you, Madam President, and Senator Cohen. What I was referring to is you can find something, an exception, that you are not writing the law around. You can find some exceptional circumstance that maybe the law was not written that it covers. But in general, from what I've seen here in 10 years, is if we can cover 80% of the circumstances with a law, we're doing pretty darn good. There's a lot of things that just don't fit inside that law, but 6 years is way too long to figure out on most of these issues if you've been harmed or not.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Ortman renews her motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 373 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. Roll call has been requested. The Secretary will take the roll on that motion. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 46 ayes and 20 nays, the motion does prevail. The Secretary will give Senate File 373 its third reading.
Senate File Number 373, a bill for enact relating to civil actions, reducing the limitation period for bringing certain actions. Third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 373. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 46 ayes and 20 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Continuing under messages from the House, the Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 429, a bill for an act relating to civil actions. Alvin A. Mathewich, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 429 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
To that motion, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this is a bill that originally was, the chief author was Senator Scheid last year. And when she was unable to continue carrying the bill, I agreed to pick it up for her. And it is a bill that we passed off the Senate floor last year on a vote of 44-21. And I would tell you, members, that the only change in the House amendment was to change the effective date to August 1st, 2012. Other than that, the body of the bill itself remains unchanged as we passed it off the floor last year.
And senators, those amendments are available on House Journal, page 5401. Senator Latz.
Madam President, I ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call granted. Senator Latz.
Madam President, this bill was bad last year, and it's still bad. I'd like to ask Senator Newman if he could briefly explain the contents of the bill, including whether or not it includes provisions relating to Rule 68 and the offers of settlement, in addition to the attorney's fees provisions.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. Subdivision 1 of the bill simply instructs the court to take into consideration the reasonableness of attorney's fees in addition to other factors the court may take into consideration where a claimant has a right to claim attorney's fees. Subdivision 2 is and deals with a Rule 68 offer of judgment, which is a rule in civil procedure that is often used in litigation for the purposes of attempting to settle lawsuits. And what this does is indicates that in a claim where money damages are being pursued and an offer of settlement or an offer of judgment is made during the course of the litigation, that if the prevailing party does not obtain a money damages verdict in excess of the offer, no attorney's fees may be granted for that period of time subsequent to the offer. And that measure is a measure that I guess I would view as a measure that would foster and encourage the settlement of litigation. Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, members, I encourage you to vote no on this motion and oppose this bill. The attorney's fees provision is very significant. I want to share with you some information relating to it. The United States Supreme Court and Minnesota Supreme Courts believe that this approach is inappropriate. The bill would not just encourage the court to consider the amount of attorney's fees in comparison to the amount of the award or judgment that was obtained. It would require proportionality. It would require proportionality, which is to say that if someone pursues a lawsuit and ends up with a fairly small monetary damage award at the end, that in cases where the statutes provide for an award of attorney's fees, the court will be mandated to consider the amount, to determine the amount of attorney's fees in comparison to the amount of the award that was obtained. So, for example, if a lawyer is bringing on behalf of an aggrieved plaintiff, say a wrongfully terminated plaintiff, and they determine that the damages are $10,000 for lost wages, but it was very important to establish the principle and correct the action by the employer, but it may take a year of attorney's efforts to be able to obtain that principle to win the liability judgment, there is absolutely no way the lawyer will be able to recover the fees in the fee-shifting statute to pay for his or her time to bring that case. I'm going to give you a specific example. a case in which it was not an employment case. It was a case of accommodation against Abercrombie and Fitch, a retailer, I believe at their store in the Mall of America. And a teenage girl was there trying on some clothes, and she had a disabling physical problem, and so her sister wanted to go into the changing room to assist her, to help in the changing. And the store made a huge stink out of that fact and prohibited the sister from going in and helping out. Now, the actual monetary damages in that case, and it was taken to trial in front of the ALJ, the Department of Human Rights, and a private counsel brought this case, took it to a hearing in front of the administrative law judge, and the administrative law judge found that the retailer had violated state law, had discriminated against this customer. Now, the actual damage award was fairly small. And I don't remember the numbers exactly, so I'm not going to cite them here on the Senate floor, but they were quite small. But the amount of work that it took for the lawyer to represent that young girl, to take the case, to work it up, to do the depositions, to do the legal arguments, to write the briefs, to have the trial, and to achieve the victory after a year or longer of litigation, resulted in an attorney's fee award that was four or five times higher than the actual monetary award for the victim of discrimination. Now, had this law been in effect at the time, the judge would not have been allowed to award full attorney's fees in that case. And so any lawyer considering taking a case as a matter of principle, when there's a good chance that the award will be fairly small, we'll simply not take that case. And what will happen is that claimants with legitimate, viable claims of discrimination will not be able to find legal counsel to take on their cases, because the legal counsel will not be able to get adequately compensated for the risks they're taking of getting no result, for the costs that they advance out of their own pocket to advance the case. What is not noted for you and should be important to consider is that the courts do consider this as a factor. They consider the result obtained in a factor among other factors, such as the risks that were involved, the amount of hours that were involved, the complexity of the case. There's a long history of the courts balancing these multiple facets of what would result in an appropriate award of attorney's fees. This legislation is completely inappropriate from that standpoint, and it would be unprecedented in its intrusion into the role of the courts in making those determinations. The separate component of this, the Rule 68 offers, it's a bit technical, and I'm just going to tell you as a practical matter that what's going to happen if this law passes is that defendants will repeatedly make ridiculously low offers of settlement under Rule 68, because this bill would require, when those offers are made, that the attorneys on the other side of the case disclose attorney-client privileged communications, the amount of work that they put into the case, number of hours they put into the case, the nature of the work that they put into the case. They'd have to disclose the basis for the amount of fees that they have accrued up to that point in the case. That also would be an unprecedented intrusion into the attorney-client relationship, into the litigation process, and it would substantially disadvantage claimants in these kind of cases. So for these reasons, I would encourage you to oppose this bill.
Further discussion, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. Don't you just love it when lawyers get up and argue about attorney's fees?
Should we vote on that?
Madam President, I just wanted to respond briefly to a couple of the comments made by Senator Latz. And the first is that I want to remind the members that the general rule in the state of Minnesota is that each side pays their own attorney's fees. And I would direct your attention specifically to line 1.7, which says that when a statute provides for the award of attorney's fees. So this particular rule is not applicable to all lawsuits and all matters which are involved in litigation. I would also indicate that I disagree with the characterization that this is going to require judges to award a small amount of attorney's fees when the amount in controversy that is in fact awarded amounts to a small amount. And I say that because, and I remind you that the bill says that the court must, in addition to other factors, and there are certain criteria that the court is going to take into consideration, and the court has great discretion in determining what factors are going to be taken into consideration in awarding attorney's fees. So the argument of proportionality, I think, is frankly very weak, because the court would be able to deviate, and again, this is simply one factor. The reasonableness is one factor that the court's going to take into consideration. As to the comments regarding the offer of judgment, my experience in the use of offers of judgment are just the opposite of Senator Latz's. When I was involved in litigation, what I perceived was that when I received an offer of judgment, that was a signal to me that the offer that I have just received is that's as good as it's going to get. You either accept it or we're going to trial. And I still believe that Rule 68 and offers of judgment are used consistently in that fashion as a signal in terms of settling litigation to the other side that if you don't accept this, we're going to trial. So this is as good as it's going to get. And in that respect, I respectfully disagree with the argument that Senator Latz has made with respect to offers of judgment. Thank you, Madam President.
Further discussion, Senator Latz.
Madam President, just a couple additional points. To Senator Newman's last point, that may be the experience up until this point with Rule 68 offers, but if this bill passes, that will change. That will change very quickly. And the Supreme Court Civil Justice Reform Task Force agrees that this would be a bad change to make in law. They just issued their report in January. A broad-based civil justice reform task force appointed by this current Supreme Court. And they specifically, in their report, oppose any changes to Rule 68. I submit that their judgment is appropriate. You know, there's a reason, members, why we have some statutes that shift the fees. It's true, the general rule is that parties bear their own attorney's fees. But there are some statutes, for example, the Human Rights Act, that specifically allows for the court, or requires the court to award attorney's fees when a plaintiff, a wrongfully terminated employee, for example, a victim of race discrimination, for example, or disability discrimination or age discrimination, if they prove their case and they win and they establish that the employer wronged them, then the fees get awarded on top of that. The reason for that is because attorneys take these cases on contingent fees. So the wronged person doesn't have to dig into their own pocket, or in most cases they don't have enough of a pocket to dig into to hire a lawyer on an hourly fee basis to pursue these cases. So the legislature has encouraged the ability of people to bring these cases to create justice, to advocate for justice in the courts, by passing the fee-shifting statutes. If this bill passes, it will be working in the opposite direction. It will take away with the other hand what the legislature has already given with the first hand. There's a reason why there's an old adage in the law which says the contingent fee is the poor person's key to the courthouse. Because without that contingent fee, without the ability for that lawyer to take the case, without getting paid up front, but with the promise that if they win, they're going to get fees. That's what enables plaintiffs, in many cases, to be able to pursue justice in the first place. This bill works against justice in that place.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I speak in support of the bill. I've practiced law in Minnesota for many years, and one of the cases that I had is a pretty good one as an example of why we need a bill like this. I represented an employer, a defendant in the state of Minnesota, and a very enterprising plaintiff's attorney was trying to make a case for attorney's fees under one of the federal statutes. And so he brought a case in the district court with a plaintiff and lost in the district court on summary judgment. We won. But the plaintiff's attorney decided to appeal to the Court of Appeals, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, and lost there as well. But here's the rub. The attorney had been paying all of the costs of the litigation, not the plaintiff. The lawyer, the attorney, had the interest in carving out a niche for attorney's fees for himself in the state of Minnesota, in our courts. And so what this bill does is it creates a more level playing field where those plaintiff's attorneys don't think that it's in their best interest to front the costs in a contingency fee to try and recover attorney's fees. This should not be a plaintiff's lawyer employment state. This should be about seeking justice, and it should be the interests of the parties that drive the lawsuits and create the incentives. Seeking justice for the parties, not enterprising opportunities for lawyers.
Further discussion, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm just going to make one more brief comment, and then I'm going to give it a rest. To the issue of the attorney's fees, again, I want to state that whenever these kinds of questions come up before the court really does have great discretion in what to do in terms of an award. And at least in my experience, very, very unusual for a court not to deviate from whatever it is the successful attorney is asking for. And I remind you that the criteria that this bill is taking into consideration is the reasonableness of the attorney's fees, taking into consideration, you know, what was sought and what was recovered. And I think that we really do have to rely on what the court is going to do when confronted with this issue. And historically, it has been discretionary with the court. So, you know, I agree with Senator Ortman that this is a justice type of an initiative. It is not something that is being implemented or brought forward to protect lawyers and trial lawyers. Rather, it is being brought forward to protect the litigants, either plaintiff or defendant, because attorney's fees and offers of judgment cut both ways for either party. Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Newman renews his motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 429 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. A roll call has been requested on the motion. The Secretary will take the roll on the motion to concur. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 43 ayes and 23 nays, the motion does prevail. The Secretary will give Senate File 429 its third reading.
Senate File Number 429, a bill for an act relating to civil actions, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 429. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 42 ayes and 24 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under messages from the House, the secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file number 530, a bill for an act relating to civil actions.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I move that the Senate concur on the amendments by the House to Senate File Number 530 and that the bill be passed on its repassage as amended.
To that motion, Senator Latz.
Madam President, will Senator Ortman explain any differences that were between the bill that left the floor of the Senate and the bill that came back from the House? I'm surprised I have to keep asking the question, but I will keep asking for it so that we know what we're voting on.
Senator Ortman.
Madam President and Senator Latz, I believe the only change was the change in the effective date.
Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam President and members. You know, sometimes when you pass a bill off the Senate floor, you do so in anticipation that there will be a conference committee between what the Senate wants and the House wants, and there'll be some compromise. And last year when the Senate considered this bill, that's exactly what was in the works. And so the Senate passed a bill anticipating that we would end up in conference committee and that we would end up with a result somewhere in the middle in terms of the numbers. Currently, the prejudgment interest rate is 10%, and the Senate passed the bill to reduce the prejudgment interest rate to 4%. The House's bill, I think when they passed it, was around 9.5%. So there was work to be done there. And in fact, as we hurtled toward the end of regular session last May, Senator Ortman was very busy trying to broker a compromise on exactly this question to try to get bills off the floor of the House because it was getting tied up in their legislative schedule, logjam at the end. Instead, now what we have is the Senate bill being sent back to us because they couldn't get their own House bill off the floor in time last May. And it certainly appears as if now this bill has been pre-conferred, so we're not going to have the opportunity to go to conference committee and to figure out a more appropriate prejudgment interest rate. I'm also a little unclear because I was under the impression that businesses would still get a 10% prejudgment interest rate. And so that's one of the reasons I was asking for clarification is whether there's any provision to that effect in this bill. But because we now have a different situation on the floor of the Senate where this bill, if passes, goes straight to the governor for signature, I'm going to encourage members to change the position that they took last May and to now vote against this bill, as I will do. Members, it is also a more informed position now than it was last spring. I've had an opportunity since that time to talk with constituents and to talk with others about the impact of having such a dramatic reduction in the prejudgment interest rate. And the fact is that a low prejudgment interest rate benefits defendants who wish to delay resolving the case. They have an advantage to hanging on to any monetary damages or monetary award maintaining that money's investment or other uses rather than paying prejudgment interest on it. Now, if they have to pay 10% prejudgment interest when there are meritorious cases, they are going to be more urgent to settle those cases and move on. But were they only a 4% prejudgment interest rate, it'll be to their own financial advantage, which they will have a duty to their owners, a fiduciary duty to shareholders, to maximize the return on their assets. They'll have a duty to delay the litigation, even legitimate, meritorious claims, solely for the purpose of earning more return on those funds than they would have to pay in prejudgment interest. They'll play the spread. Meanwhile, plaintiffs will continue to incur medical bills without having any means of paying for them, credit card bills in which they're paying 18 to 20% during the pendency of litigation will continue to accrue at higher rates. And the parties, the meritorious claims, will have justice delayed, meaning justice denied, as Senator Ortman has explained. Only this case, it really would be justice denied. It's not fair to the plaintiffs. And members, this isn't about the lawyers. This is about their clients. It's about the clients who have the claims that are seeking compensation for their injuries. Going into a specialized system of justice, lawyers are the mechanism by which they can obtain that justice. But the purpose and the results are to compensate the individual clients for their losses. And when they achieve a settlement or they achieve a judgment, then they have received that appropriate compensation for their losses. Members, a question was asked of me about the difference in the interest rates between what local governments pay as prejudgment interest and what others pay. And it's a fair question because we do have in statute that local governments do pay the 4% interest rate. And there's a reason for that. One is local governments don't have an established tendency to intentionally delay the resolution of litigation just to drag out the case and put more and more pressure on the plaintiffs, financially and otherwise. Secondly, most local government cases are property tax cases or eminent domain cases, and they, by their very nature, tend to drag on for years just because of the kinds of cases they are. And so this legislature, in its wisdom, determined that it was more appropriate for them to have a lower prejudgment interest rate accruing during the pendency of those kinds of cases with those kinds of defendants. But we're not talking about those kind of cases here, members. We're talking about personal injury cases. We're talking about wrongful termination cases. We're talking about consumer credit cases. We're talking about consumer fraud cases. We're talking about medical malpractice cases. We're talking about all the other kinds of cases that are involved. And in those cases, the defendants right now have a disincentive to intentionally delay cases. If we reduce the interest rate, they will have an added incentive to do that. The fact is we don't have a litigation problem in Minnesota, and we don't have a bad business climate for litigation in Minnesota. The United States Chamber of Commerce, in its own business litigation survey of in-house defense counsel, the lawyers that are working directly for the businesses that are defendants in these cases, in 2010 ranked Minnesota 11th best in the nation for business litigation climate. We're not the worst. We're not the 10th worst. We're not even in the bottom half for business litigation climate. We are 11th best in the nation for businesses to defend against claims. So once again, I ask you, where is the problem that this bill seeks to solve? It simply does not exist. Medical malpractice cases, members, in 2010, only 101 medical malpractice cases were filed in Minnesota.
101 cases. In a state with a population of 5.5 million people, there is not a litigation explosion in Minnesota. There's not a problem that needs to be solved. Why are we even bothering with this? Members, this is a bad bill. It's bad for consumers. It's bad for individual claimants. It's good for big insurance. It's good for defense lawyers. It's good for defense lawyers who will get paid more to drag out their cases. It'll be really tough on plaintiff's lawyers who are representing individuals trying to get into the courthouse to find justice. I encourage you to vote no on this bill. And I ask for a roll call if I haven't already.
Further discussion, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, isn't it kind of funny that all we did was change the effective date and now this bill went from good to bad? There were 64 members of the Senate that voted for this bill last year, and all we did was change the effective date. It would be kind of funny to go to a conference committee to discuss the effective date and see if we can't negotiate that. Now, last year there was a strategy in the House to combine all of these bills into one to see if they could stop it, but all of these bills were introduced individually, and that's how they came back from the House, which is not all that unusual. But let me speak to the merits of this bill. This bill makes a lot of sense because right now in our courts in the state of Minnesota, if you have a lawsuit that's pending, you earn 10% return on your money just to continue the lawsuit as long as you possibly can. That's outrageous that you can get 10% by parking your lawsuit as opposed to what you could get if you parked your investment elsewhere. You can't possibly get 10%. So all this does is tie our prejudgment interest rate back to the Treasury rate, which is what the law said in Minnesota prior to 2009. It's got a floor of 4%, so you're never going to get less than 4% return for the prejudgment time period in the lawsuit. So 4% is reasonable, or whatever the Treasury rate is. That's what Minnesota law was for many years. In 2009, there was a change, members. And the proposal at the time was to change it to 10%. When we passed that, I opposed it. Many of the members here opposed that change. And then folks came back the next year, DFL members, and said, wait a minute, the local units of government can't afford this prejudgment interest rate of 10%. Please change them back to the pre-2009 plan of the Treasury rate with a floor of 4%. And we tried in this chamber to make that true for all Minnesotans. If it's good enough for local government, it should be good enough for all Minnesotans in a court of law. But what happened instead was we carved out a provision for local units of government. They get the 4% rate now, or the Treasury rate, whichever is better, but not the rest of Minnesota. And so what this bill does is recognize the fact that that's not workable. 10% creates a perverse incentive to delay a lawsuit, and we don't want that in Minnesota. As Senator Latz has said, justice delayed is justice denied. It should never be more valuable to somebody to delay a lawsuit than to invest in a bank or in business or in some other opportunity.
Further discussion? Senator Latz.
Members, I do have the answer to a question I asked earlier from Senator Ortman as to the impact or how this would apply to certain businesses. It was not a change made in the House. It was in the bill that left the floor from the Senate. Another reason why this bill, frankly, is not ready to be passed on to the governor. It exempts breach of insurance policy claims under 68.0811. So when commercial enterprises or professionals have an insurance policy and they need to bring a claim against their own insurer to secure coverage, they're not subject to the reduction to 4%. They're subject to the 10% prejudgment interest rate. So apparently we're picking winners and losers here. And we can see who the winners are. The winners are businesses. And winners are professionals who are trying to get coverage. Members, this is a bad bill, and I encourage you to vote against it.
Further discussion, Senator Ortman.
Members, that provision was in the bill when it left the Senate and got 64 votes last year. That was not a change that was added. And I would also let folks know that what that is about, that insurance provision, is that if an insurance company wants to deny coverage, they shouldn't be able to earn 10%. The insurance coverage, we don't want the insurance industry to blindly deny coverage. And the benefit goes to the individuals covered as well as businesses covered. So this isn't really picking winners and losers. This is just doing our best to make sure that insurance companies do the right thing when claims get filed.
Senator Ortman renews her motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 530 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. Was there a roll call request? Secretary will take the roll on the motion. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 45 ayes and 20 nays, the motion it does prevail. Secretary will give Senate File 530 its third reading.
Senate File Number 530, Bill for an Act Relating to Civil Actions, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 530. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 44 ayes and 21 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House file, herewith transmitted House File Number 56, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There is no action necessary on that message. Moving to the fourth order of business, the first reading of House bills. There are several printed on page 3. First reading, they are referred as indicated. Moving to the fifth order of business, reports of committee. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, members, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted with the exception of the reports pertaining to appointments.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that the committee reports pertaining to appointments be laid on the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on to the sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills. There are several printed on page 4 of the agenda. Second reading. Moving to the seventh order of business, second reading of House bills. There's one printed on page 4 of the agenda. Second reading. Moving on to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's Senate bill agenda, or introductions, excuse me. There is one change on page 2. Senate file 1711 will be referred to Judiciary and Public Safety. The others are referred as indicated. First reading. Moving to the ninth order of business, motions and resolutions, Senator Reiner. We will move on. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that Senate File 1509 be withdrawn from the Committee on Jobs and Economic Growth and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety.
Any explanation to that motion, Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes, I did talk it over with both the chairs, Senator Limmer as well as Senator Michelle, and they agreed that this belongs in Judiciary because it is a liability issue, a ski liability issue, and therefore it would belong in the Judiciary Committee.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Madam President. My apologies. My desk had too many papers on it. I move that Senate File 72 be withdrawn from the Committee on Higher Education and be returned to me, its author.
And, Senator, you indicated you are the author?
I am the author.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Chamberlain.
Madam President, I move that Senate File 1671 be withdrawn from the Committee on Finance and re-referred to State Government Innovation and Veterans.
Explanation of that motion, Senator Chamberlain.
Madam President, all parties generally agree that would be the better place to have the discussion for this bill.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that Senate File 1528, number 5, on the general orders be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Explanation on that motion, Senator Nelson.
The Finance Chair would like to take a look at it.
All those in favor say All those in favor of Senator Nelson's motion say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. I have several excuses today. Senator Rosen will be excused for all day, and Senator Cohen from 1 o'clock to the end without objection. Further announcements of Senate interest, Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam President. First and foremost, to the senators here, just want to remind you that you're invited to join Major General Rick Nash and his senior military staff for a Minnesota National Guard orientation and breakfast. It's within walking distance over at the Armory. Starts tomorrow at 7 o'clock.
You could stop in for breakfast. Major General Nash will be speaking at 8 o'clock, and it's going to be open until 3 o'clock. There'll be a lot of displays. They'll be talking about and informing you about all the programs that the Army National Guard has, and it looks like it's going to be a very good event, and I just wanted to remind everyone to take part if they could. And State Government Innovation and Veterans will meet 10 minutes after we adjourn.
Further announcements, Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, just to remind you about the Legislative Audit Commission, you should have gotten the packet in your mail recently. Please fill out and return that as soon as you can. Thank you.
Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, sensing no further announcements, I do now move that the Senate adjourn until tomorrow, Thursday, February 9th, at 11 o'clock.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. We are adjourned.